you can finally afford your own airplane. Does that mean buying one is the smart thing to do? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. And aside from having some unique insights on safety topics, or some unique positions at least, Bob also has something to talk to us about today that's of an economic nature. And Bob, thanks for joining us.
Paul, my pleasure.
You had an article in the current edition of Over the Airwaves about the economics of owning versus renting. And you made the suggestion that for someone who flies less than about 200 hours a year, they ought to be renting.
Well, this is a really an age-old question. Should I buy or should I rent? And if you factor in the numbers, the fixed cost of owning, the variable cost of owning, insurance, hangar, maintenance, inspections, and whatnot, if you crank the numbers, most of us who look at this come up with about 200 hours as a magical break-even point. Once you fly beyond 200 hours a year, and that's really, if you look at it, about 4 hours a week on average, then it's more economical to buy versus rent. In the article, however, I tried to argue that if you do a few things right, if you buy right, if you get an airplane appropriate to your needs, we can make a pretty good argument that owning really can be a much more affordable way to go.
All right. Now, one of the things that always comes up when I talk to friends about this is they say, well, you know, what does it cost to buy an airplane? And that's really kind of the wrong question to be asking, because if you compare that to some of the other purchases in your life, if, for example, compared to what it would cost you to buy a luxury SUV, that's not apples to apples, because what you have to look at is the cost of ownership, not the cost of purchase. That airplane, if you take care of it, may be worth more when you sell it than it was when you buy it.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're clearly correct on that. And just on a very short-term example, I had a choice a number of years ago of putting $200,000 into the stock market or buying a used airplane. I had to scrimp and save and make onerous monthly payments. But that $200,000 that I spent 10 years ago is still worth $200,000. The $200,000 that I might have put in the stock market isn't worth $200,000 today. But okay, that's an exception. We've had a big turn down in the economy. But I have a student who is owns one of the larger automobile dealerships in Western New York. He's very astute, a very astute businessman. He's also a very active boater. And when I say boater, big boats, 46, 47 foot boats that go in the ocean. And he's new to aviation, but he's now in the process of purchasing. He's looking for a two-year-old Cessna 182 Turbo. And he said, you know, really, this is the first time I've ever made a major purchase outside of purchasing real estate or a house where I think whatever I do, I can't really go wrong if I do it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you buy a boat, no two ways about it, that boat is going to depreciate with age. If you buy a car, unless it's an antique classic, that's going to depreciate with age. But he's done enough study, and I can certainly support his conclusion, that an airplane, on the other hand, will hold its value pretty much close to what the cost of living index is doing, so that you can buy an older airplane for X amount of dollars and reasonably expect in 10 years that airplane is going to be worth roughly the same, assuming, of course, that you've taken care of it,
mm-hmm.
Assuming, of course, that there's been no damage history to it, and that you bought it at the right price to begin with. Now, we can always pay too much and then lose that. This, by the way, is not true with a brand new airplane. You know, clearly, the smell of new leather, we pay a premium for that,
mm-hmm.
That showroom discount that we lose the minute we make its first takeoff. But outside of that, we can buy a 2-3 year old airplane, and if we buy it properly, that's an investment that will stay with us.
There was one option too that I didn't see mentioned in your article, and that is that if you're somewhere around that 200 hour per year number, or maybe even substantially less, there may be circumstances where going in with 4 or 5 other people and buying an airplane makes sense.
That can make sense. You know, a word of caution, that's like any partnership deal. You have to have people that you enjoy flying with. I've been cautioned in the past take on partners because, you know, it's a better way to get utilization out of your airplane. But you also have to think what might happen if one or two or more of those partners bail out. But, the partnership is a very good way to go. You know, there's other things you can do, such as home building and use a little bit of sweat equity to acquire an airplane. I also think that the fixed costs are going to go down if you own an airplane simply because you're going to tend to fly more. If you have an airplane that's readily available to you whenever you want it, you're going to fly more, and the more we fly, at least that begins to lower the fixed cost per hour of owning an airplane.
Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about something that this time of year brings, and that is the pancake fly-in breakfast season. And every year, I see some pretty scary things happen in the patterns around those events, and let's talk about that a little bit.
You bet.
Bob Miller's my guest of Over the Airwaves, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Platt, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt, talking with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We talk about safety topics on Mondays for the most part. Bob, one of the things that happens around this time of year, at least for those of us far enough above the equator in the Northern Hemisphere to have nice weather returning, is that, you know, every EAA chapter, sometimes even non-aviation charities, have fly-in pancake breakfasts at airports. And little airports that are uncontrolled airspace suddenly turn from being, you know, sleepy little remote idyllic settings into being, you know, Grand Central Station. And once in a while, you see some scary things happen in the pattern, especially when there are locals who maybe aren't aware that the event is occurring and maybe a bunch of guys are based there who don't have radios and that sort of thing. What can we do to get ready, and what kind of things should we watch out for to go into that environment?
Well, one of the things that I think that we can do is just develop our see and avoid skills. Just assume that nobody is listening and nobody is broadcasting, and become, you know, very good at looking out the windows to see where other traffic is, and take somebody along with you, or if you have passengers, you know, really begin to brief them on how to watch out for other people in the pattern, and then to have the good sense to leave the pattern if things are getting a little dicey. If you start to see, you know, 4, 5, 6 airplanes and it looks like it's getting a little bit out of control, then leave the pattern. That I've done that many, many times. I've just said, I'm not going to hang around here. Somebody's going to get seriously hurt. Number two, a pet peeve of mine when talking with local pilots in and around the pattern, have them stop immediately giving position reports to references on the ground. Instead, give position reports in miles from the airport and directions from the airport. When somebody says to me, you know, I'm over the water tower, or I'm over the state school, or I'm over the ponds, you know, if I'm not from the airport, I have no clue where that is. And that's a simple little thing. I'm 3 miles to the south, 3 miles to the east. Another pet peeve of mine, and I've seen this happen on just too many occasions, where we have an amateur air traffic controller on the ground with a handheld mic starting to call the sequence for landing. That to me is an absolute invitation to disaster, because what it does, it causes the pilots that he's talking to gain reliance on what this amateur air traffic controller is attempting to say and do, and he's simply not trained to do that. So let's not do that. Other things, keep the pattern fairly tight. when we see individuals in the pattern that are using these long 3-mile airline patterns, that's something that we have to talk to our fellow pilots about, keeping the patterns fairly straight, keeping them fairly tight, I should say. Other things that we can do that are just common sense, like not following too closely, maintaining agreed upon speeds in the pattern. All you have to do is fly into Sun and Fun, which is coming up here fairly shortly. Experience that arrival, even with trained professional air traffic controllers. It can become an attention getting event to get into a very busy pattern like that. But to your point, Paul, if it gets too busy, simply leave the pattern.
And if you're organizing a pancake breakfast, maybe it's worthwhile to have a little safety meeting for the ground people ahead of time and say, you know what, we're here to park airplanes, not to be air traffic control. Because, if for no other reason than liability.
Well, sure. I would hate to have the liability of something like that. Another thing we can do, if a pancake breakfast starts at 8 o'clock, get up a little bit early. Get there at 7. Help the folks set up. And then commit to remaining there until much of the crowd has left. This is something that is a risk, and we all know that the traffic pattern is where most of these accidents occur, in and around a traffic pattern. So, the best advice I can give is keep your eyes out the window, outside the cockpit, and just one little last cautionary note, because we're victims of it over here at Bob Miller Flight Training. Those of us that are flying in glass cockpit airplanes, where we have very colorful attention gathering panels that help to keep our eyes focused inside the airplane, that's no place to be when operating in and around a traffic pattern. You've got to spend 95% of your time looking out the window, the other 5% of the time looking at the airspeed indicator.
All right, Bob. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go. I'm getting hungry just thinking about this now. But we appreciate your input, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Bob.
Bob Miller has been my guest. You can find the current edition of his newsletter at overtheairwaves.com. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.